Radio Prague News. Talks with Canada on lifting the visa requirement for Czechs are reportedly making headway. Petr Hoštěk has been appointed head of the National Security Office, and the police have cleared the leader of the opposition Civic Democratic Party, Mirek Topolánek, of suspicion of shady finances. Talks with Canadian authorities on lifting the visa requirement for Czech citizens are reportedly making headway. Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek told reporters on Thursday that he had high hopes the matter would be resolved ahead of the summer holiday season. The Czech Republic has been pressing for years to get the unilateral visa requirement lifted, and on a working visit to Canada this week, the Czech Foreign Minister Cyril Svoboda warned his counterpart that unless the matter was resolved soon, the Czech Republic would take reciprocal measures. The Canadian Foreign Minister is to visit the Czech Republic in June, and the matter of visas is expected to top the agenda of the talks. Petr Hoštěk has been appointed head of the National Security Office. Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek, who nominated him for the post, described him as a dedicated professional with an excellent reputation. Parliament's Defence and Security Committee approved Hoštěk's nomination earlier this week. Hoštěk, 42, graduated from the military academy at Výškov, was a professional soldier for several years, and is now deputy director of the Central Bohemian Police Force. He will replace Jan Mareš, who resigned as head of the National Security Office when it emerged that he had links with highly suspect individuals. The office itself has been harmed by a number of corruption scandals in recent months. The police have cleared the leader of the opposition Civic Democratic Party, Mirek Topolánek, of suspicion of shady finances. A police spokesperson said an investigation into how Mr. Topolánek had acquired his Prague flat had revealed no irregularities. The investigation was conducted on the grounds of an anonymous letter which claimed that the flat had been paid for by the power company CES. And finally, a look at the weather forecast. Friday is expected to be overcast with rain showers and day temperatures between 13 and 17 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the International Service of Czech Radio. I'm Peter Smith. Well, former British Prime Minister John Major is in Prague to talk about public-private partnerships, and not, he insists, to boost the Civic Democrats' electoral profile. Mr. Major in a moment. Also, violence rears its ugly head in Czech politics as a communist MP is attacked in the street. And, two decades on, we look at the impact of the Chernobyl nuclear power disaster here in the Czech Republic. Public-private partnerships, which promote cooperation between the state and the private sector, have met with success worldwide. In the UK, for example, such projects have invited investments worth 70 billion euros, that's nearly 2 trillion Czech crowns, and developing countries have also benefited from the model. On Wednesday, a discussion took place in Prague on how public-private partnerships, or PPPs, could benefit the Czech Republic. The most prominent guest was former British Prime Minister Sir John Major, the man commonly regarded as pioneering the idea. Chris Jarrett went along to find out more.
On Wednesday morning, Sir John Major took the podium to deliver the keynote speech at this year's conference. The event, which was overseen by the leader of the Czech right-of-centre opposition Civic Democrats, Mirek Topolánek, came at a key point in the run-up to the Czech elections and gave Topolánek a chance to discuss a major policy issue. Public-private partnerships have not always heralded great success in the Czech Republic. There has never existed the kind of legally stable environment necessary to support such plans, and the model is still very much in its infancy here. But as PPPs are a proven method of limiting costs while providing more efficient services, many Czech organisations are now keen to use them. Legislation is now being negotiated within which PPP projects could operate more effectively, and the potential for them to become a significant part of Czech public services is now much greater. At a press conference following the main forum, John Major reiterated why he felt they were essential in the Czech Republic.
There will never be enough money in the public sector from the taxpayer to provide all the new services and new physical infrastructure that the Czech Republic needs. It is therefore essential to bring in private capital as well. That will be important for competitiveness within the European Union and important for competitiveness beyond the European Union.
Indeed, on a European scale, the Czech Republic has yet to benefit from PPPs to the extent to which other Central European countries such as Poland or Slovakia have. After the conference, Mirek Topolánek told me he thinks the country has a lot to learn from Sir John Major's extensive experience in the field.
John Major started the first project, and I think he has the biggest experience in this field. I think it was very important to hear what are some threats or mistakes during this process.
And indeed, the past use of public-private partnerships in the Czech Republic has been riddled with mistakes. It is hard to refer to PPPs here without remembering the huge failure of the D47 motorway in North Moravia, a project which came to a standstill amid rumours of corruption and incompetence, and the Internet for Schools scheme, which drew controversy from the start. So do PPPs still have potential? Mirek Topolánek believes that they do.
We have very, very bad example of using of PPP project in our highway in North Moravia, and I think it's necessary to persuade public people to understand this project, to believe that these projects could improve public services, and I think the fields of using of this project are very, very, very big, because we want to realize this project in transportation and in traffic, in building of new highways and so on. I think it's possible to use this project in many other areas, and I hope that we will be able to realize this project more than anybody is able to imagine.
Although there is still a long way to go before the Czech Republic can compete with its European neighbours in terms of the effective use of public-private partnerships, both the right-wing opposition that hosted the conference and the ruling Social Democrats do seem keen to learn from what has been achieved in the UK.
Chris Jarrett there. The Czech Republic is a pretty stable place politically, give or take the odd government crisis and vote of confidence now and then. Violence certainly is a rare phenomenon in Czech politics, so when it does occur, it causes something of a shock. Today's front pages show the bruised and bloodied face of communist MP Jiří Dolejš, who was set upon in the streets by three attackers on Monday evening. Rob Cameron has been following this story and joins me now in the studio. Rob, tell us more about this attack.
Well, Peter, Mr. Dolejš, who's an MP for the Communists as well as the deputy leader of the party, was attacked on his way home from Parliament on Monday evening. He says three, maybe four men beat him to the ground and kicked him in the head, leaving him with a severe bruising on his face and damage to his eye.
OK, was this just a random mugging, or was it actually politically motivated?
Well, Mr. Dolejš says it was politically motivated, and as evidence for that, he says the three men didn't steal anything and shouted things like, "You commie bastard," as they were beating him and kicking him. On Wednesday, he was well enough to return to Parliament, where he spoke briefly to reporters.
Napadení.
This was a deliberate attack. The people who attacked me used terms to describe the communists which I have no intention of repeating in the media.
Well, this attack comes only 1 month before the elections. The timing could be seen as significant, do you think?
It could indeed, and the communists have certainly used the assault on Mr. Dolejš as ammunition against their political enemies. One of Mr. Dolejš's party colleagues said anti-communist campaigners who print T-shirts saying things like "kill a communist, strengthen world peace" were creating an atmosphere of violence and suggesting that there was a direct link between anti-communist propaganda and this attack. So certainly, Peter, as the elections draw closer, incidents like these are bound to raise the political temperature.
Yeah, but as you said before, I mean, these things are very rare, aren't they?
They are, yes. I mean, there have been around two dozen attacks on Czech politicians in the last, say, 15 years. In 1992, the former communist leader, Jiří Svoboda, was stabbed and injured. 10 years ago, the late Social Democrat MP, Pavel Dostal, who was also culture minister, was attacked by two men and slashed with razor blades. So violence is not unknown, but as far as I know, no one has ever been killed, and certainly political violence in this country is nowhere near as serious a problem as it is, let's say, further east.
Okay, thank you there, Rob Cameron. Czech archaeologists have an impressive reputation around the world, working in many different countries. This week, they all came together in Prague to swap notes, report on progress made and outline prospects for the future. Daniela Lazarova reports.
Czechs are now involved in excavation work in Egypt, Syria, Uzbekistan, Bulgaria and Kuwait. All have come up with some important finds, but it is the Egyptologists who have really made an international impact. After more than a century of research and 40 years of excavation work in the land of the pharaohs, Czech archaeologists have many important finds to their name. Ladislav Bareš is head of the Czech Institute of Egyptology.
Our work in Egypt definitely belongs to the most prestigious work abroad of Czech archaeologists. Our institute, the Czech Institute of Egyptology, is working in Egypt since 1960, and we have done quite a lot of work, quite a lot of successes have been done during that period of time.
An exciting find in 1982 and 96, I believe. What were they?
Well, 1982, it was an archive of papyri, one of the oldest papyrus archives from the whole history of ancient Egypt. And in 1996, it was an intact shaft tomb of a lesser dignitary, but in spite of that, it was a very nice find, a first intact tomb of such kind found after 55 years. Abusir as a place was a long time neglected. Everybody thought that there is nothing new or nothing interesting to be found there. So it was a big surprise when we started our work there and made there those magnificent discoveries.
The Czech team is one of only a dozen which have been granted permanent status in Egypt. The Abusir excavation site has proved unexpectedly rewarding, and Czech archaeologists there have big plans for the future. The head of the team in Abusir, Professor Miroslav Werner, who discovered an unplundered tomb in 1996, is now hoping for greater things, the seat of a former government and a long-lost palace.
In my opinion, regardless of all what has so far been discovered in Abusir, mostly in the Abusir necropolis and pyramid field, there is still a lot of work to be done. For instance, the discovery and exploration of the pyramid town Ba Neferirkara, pyramid town which is known from written documents and which surely existed in Abusir. Another such archaeological challenge represents the residence, which is so far little known, you know, and archaeologically practically unknown as far as the Old Kingdom is concerned, the third millennium BC.
Can you explain what the residence is?
The residence was the seat of the government of that time. It was the executive branch of the Egyptian top administration. So far, no residence dating from the Old Kingdom was discovered. There is a hypothesis that such a residence might have existed in Abusir, possibly in the area of the Lake of Abusir. So these are the priorities, in my opinion. Perhaps I should not forget still one great challenge, namely the palace of Sahure. So far, no royal palace dating from the Old Kingdom was discovered in Egypt. And again, the written documents inform us very clearly that such a palace, which was named, extolled is the beauty of Sahure, must have existed in Abusir, definitely. So another important challenge for Czech archaeologists.
The Czech archaeological team, headed by Professor Werner, has just received a grant which will enable it to continue its work in Abusir for another 7 years. In the meantime, in Prague, a new generation of archaeologists is in the making. Professor Barış again.
Just this year we are starting a new year of study of Egyptology, and about 140 people are trying to get to the study of Egyptology, so enormous number. And of course we are lucky because it shows us that our work is good and brings its results.
Ladislav Barış there, the head of the Czech Institute of Egyptology, ending that report from Daniela Lazarova. Well, it's 20 years since the world's worst ever nuclear disaster at the Chernobyl power plant in Ukraine. In Czech Science, Pavlo Horakovar looks at the sometimes worrying impact that Chernobyl had here in the Czech Republic.
Rada ministrů Sovětského svazu oznámila, že na černobylské atomové elektrárně pokračují práce k likvidaci následků.
Czechoslovak radio announcing on April the 30th that the situation at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant is improving. Precisely at that time, the radioactive cloud has reached Czechoslovakia. It's one of those occasions where everyone remembers what they were doing when the news broke. At least I do. Together with hundreds of thousands of people across Czechoslovakia, I was at a compulsory May the 1st demonstration, standing outside in the rain which was bringing down radioactive iodine as the cloud had just hit this country. Dana Kuchtová is an anti-nuclear activist and now a deputy chairwoman of the Green Party.
Česká republika v roce 86 své obyvatelstvo o havárii Černobylu a o
The Czechoslovak authorities did not warn the citizens. As late as April the 30th, the state news agency issued a report that no increase in radiation had been monitored. 5 days later, another report said the non-existent radiation level was falling. Unlike in neighboring countries, people were not recommended to stay indoors, especially while it was raining.
Irena Malátová is from the National Radiation Protection Institute, which has concrete data on radiation levels in Czechoslovakia following the Chernobyl disaster.
It was measurable. However, the impact was just minor. These doses were relatively quite low, so it was not necessary to introduce any countermeasures for the protection of population. In spite of this, some countermeasures were introduced, but these countermeasures were of such a features that they didn't influence the normal life of people. For example, that it was recommended that the milking cow will be left in stables, not fed from pasture. Then the production of baby formula was transferred from one factory to the another one, because this first one was surrounded by pastures with higher contamination. So the activity of cesium 137 and 134 was higher in this place.
It was not only cesium that was monitored on Czechoslovak territory.
The most important, of course, was iodine 131, then cesium 137 and 134, also tellurium 132 and iodine 32 was measurable. We could measure also in the environment and people ruthenium 103. And there were some other radionuclides which we were able to measure in aerosols or in deposit on the ground, but their significance from the point of view of the doses to people was less than, for example, of the significance of iodine and cesium.
It is iodine 131 that has been blamed for the loss of several hundred male babies in Czechoslovakia.
Dr. Miroslav Peterka from the Institute of Experimental Medicine in Prague believes that they were miscarried after their mothers were exposed to radioactive fallout during a specific period of pregnancy in which fetuses are particularly vulnerable to radiation exposure.
We're saying that critical period for radiation exposure is during third month of pregnancy. It means the most critical. This data about critical period as concerns during third months of pregnancy correlate with Japanese results after radiation after Nagasaki, Hiroshima.
During unrelated research, Dr. Peterka discovered a singular irregularity in the newborn sex ratio, which occurred in November 1986, 7 months after the disaster. In that month, fewer boys were born than girls, which had never occurred in the 50 years that records have been kept. Male fetuses are generally more vulnerable, and Dr. Peterka believes their loss can be blamed on the post-Chernobyl radiation. However, this hypothesis is disputed by some other experts who say no similar findings have been made elsewhere after Chernobyl, and also that doses here, some 1,100 kilometers away from Chernobyl, were very small compared to even natural radiation that everyone is exposed to in the environment. Today, there are two nuclear power plants in the Czech Republic, at Dukovany, which was built in the late 1980s, and at Temelín, both not far from the border with fiercely anti-nuclear Austria. It is the Temelín plant that has received most publicity, mainly because opponents to nuclear power say it is potentially unsafe, combining Soviet design and Western operating technologies. Dana Drábová is the chairwoman of the State Office for Nuclear Safety.
First of all, you have to have in mind that the Temelín reactors are of very different design from the Chernobyl ones. There is no graphite to be burned during accident. There is a pressure vessel containing the core of the reactor. There is no pressure vessel in reality in Chernobyl types reactor. There is a containment which in the case of some severe accident, it is of extremely low probability, but nevertheless there is this containment to isolate radioactive materials from the environment. And what concerns the combination of technologies, I can see it even as a benefit, because the original Soviet design of, say, mechanical or machinery parts of the power plant, like pressure vessel and so on, was very robust with very high safety margins. And what was added is a really state-of-the-art instrumentation and control system. And to add it, it's no problem in my opinion, because if you know the algorithm and you can tell the system what to do, there is really no problem.
It's been 20 years since the worst nuclear disaster in history. Dana Drábová of the State Office for Nuclear Safety says that however tragic the accident was, humankind has learned its lesson from Chernobyl. And she says it is all the more true for the international nuclear community.
There is quite a lot of various lessons. We can mention lessons concerning the design of nuclear power plants, the design of reactors, the safety features of reactors. But what is, in my personal view, the most important lesson is the crucial role of the so-called human factor and the reliability and the role of operators of such utilities as nuclear power plants are, and the attention towards the training, towards the education, towards the responsibility of these people taking care of the safe operation is now much, much better than it was before Chernobyl.
Well, this month's Czech Science was presented by Pavla Horáková, and we're just about out of time on Radio Prague for today. Please do write in to us. We're always pleased to hear from you. The address is Radio Prague 12099. Prague to the Czech Republic, as simple as that, it will get there. And also the email, english@radio.cz. Once again, english@radio.cz. Also, we have a very interesting website. Please do check it out, www.radio.cz/English. Go on there, lots of news and information about the Czech Republic and indeed about our radio station. Anyway, that's it from me, Peter Smith, on a lovely sunny day here in Prague. Until next time, bye-bye.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, onde courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.